Chapter 15. On the command to guard their private parts. In the next sentence it says, tell the believing men to guard their private parts. 24:30. To guard from what? From everything which is not correct, guard against both corruption and the glance of others. As you know, it was not the custom among Arabs in the age of ignorance to hide their private parts. Islam came and made it obligatory to cover this area. It should be noted that the present Western civilization is moving directly towards the habits of the pre-Islamic Arabs in the age of ignorance, and they are continuously weaving philosophies justifying that nakedness is a good thing. Russell in On Discipline says that another illogical ethics or taboo is that a mother and father tell their children to cover themselves, which only creates a greater curiosity in children, and parents should show their sexual organs to children so that they become aware of whatever there is from the beginning. Now, they do this. But the Holy Quran says, and guard their private parts, both from corruption and from the view of others. Covering one's private parts is obligatory in Islam, except, of course, between a husband and wife, and it is among the most disapproved acts for a mother to be naked before her son or a father before his daughter, that is purer for them. God is aware of the things they do. 24:30. Say to the believing women that they cast down their glance. 24:31. You see that in these two verses, the ruling for a man and woman is the same. This is not something particular to men. For instance, if women were forbidden from looking and not men, there would have been a distinction that such and such was all right for men but not for women. It is clear, then, that when there is no distinction made between men and women, it has another purpose which we shall discuss in the next lesson. Chapter 16. The command not to reveal their adornment. And to guard their private parts. The word farj is used in Arabic to refer to both a man and a woman's private parts. The fact that men and women have both been commanded to guard their modesty, to guard their private parts, is in relation to two things: the view of others, and this includes everybody except a husband and wife, and the other is that one should guard one's modesty from corruption, from adultery. If we look at the external form of the verse, perhaps we would conclude that it only refers to corruption, but because, from the time of the Prophet's companions and the very first commentaries on the Holy Quran, it has been clearly recorded that wherever the Holy Quran says, guard their private parts, it means from adultery, except in those verses where it is to guard the private parts from the view of others. Thus, this verse either refers to the collective view or it refers to the view of others if we take the traditions into account. There is no difference of opinion here. The third duty is not to reveal their adornment, which refers to that which is separate from the body, like jewels and gold, as well as things that are attached to the body, like henna or collyrium. Chapter 17. The exceptions. As to the fact that they should reveal not their adornment, there are two exceptions in the Holy Quran. The first is except such as is outward, and the second is except to their husbands, etc. Both of these have to be discussed further, in particular, the first exception. Women should not reveal their adornment, except such as is outward. What does this refer to? Is it beauty which is most often hidden under clothes that must not be revealed? Then what is that which is outward? From the beginning of Islam, many questions arose in relation to except such as is outward, which were asked from the companions of the Holy Prophet and the helpers, and many Shiites asked the pure Imams. There is almost total agreement regarding this point. That is, whether one is a Sunni who refers to the companions and helpers of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, or one be a Shiite who refers to the recorders of those traditions, there is more or less agreement that which is outward is collyrium, a ring, and, in some, an anklet. That is, adornments which are used on the two hands and the face. This then shows that it is not obligatory for women to cover their face or their hands. Things which adorn them may appear as long as they are part of common usage. The adornments which are applied to the hands and the face are not obligatory to be covered. There are great many traditions in relation to this. It was asked from Imam Sadiq, peace be upon him, what may be displayed of adornments. That is, those things which are not obligatory to cover. He said, it refers to collyrium and a ring, and they are on the face and hands. Abu Basir said he asked Imam Sadiq, peace be upon him, the exception, and he said a ring and bracelet. There is a tradition recorded by a person who was not a Shiite, but because of his reliability, he is referred to and quoted by the ulama. He says that he heard from Imam Jafar, peace be upon him, that the exception is the face and the hands. These are all similar in what they say. When the face and hands do not need to be covered, then their adornment, even more so. There is another tradition narrated by Ali ibn Ibrahim from Imam Baqir, peace be upon him. He was asked about this exception and he said it includes a woman's clothes, collyrium, ring and coloring of the palms of the hands and a bracelet. Then the Imam said that we have three levels of adornment, the adornment all people may see, the adornment which mahram may see, and the adornment for one's spouse. That which may be displayed for the people is the face and hands and their adornment, such as collyrium, a ring, a bracelet, but the adornment which may be displayed before someone who is mahram is the neck and above, including a necklace, an armlet, hands plus an anklet, and anything below the ankles. There is, of course, a difference of opinion as to what can be revealed before someone who is mihram. That which can be concluded from the totality of the traditions and according to the edicts of the religious jurisprudence is that no one is mahram other than one's husband from the navel to the knees. That is, a woman must cover herself from the navel to the knee, from even her father or brother, and from the navel above, it must be covered from everyone except one's father. But for the husband, a woman may display her whole body. We have other traditions in this area, as well, such as the fact that women must cast their veils over their bosoms. Before the revelation of this verse, women would wear a scarf, but they would place the ends behind their head so that their earrings, neck and chest would show, since their dresses were most often V-necked. With the revelation of this verse, it became clear that they had to cover their ears, neck and chest with their head covering. There is a traditional recorded by Ibn Abbas, the well-known transmitter of traditions, that it is obligatory for women to cover their chests and neck. The first exception we have referred to relates to what is not obligatory to be covered. The second exception refers to those before whom it is not obligatory to cover, such as fathers, husbands, children, etc. Chapter 18. Is looking permissible for men? In this area there are two points to be recognized and separated, at least mentally. One is what is obligatory for women to cover and what is not. If we say that it is not obligatory for women to cover their face and hands, does this agree with the saying it is advisable for men to lower their gaze? Or is that something separate? Is it something which needs to be discussed separately? Is it possible that it is not obligatory for women to cover, even though this is definite in jurisprudence, but that it be advisable for men to lower their gaze? We know from the lifestyle of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, that it is not obligatory for men to cover their head, hands, face or neck. Does this mean that it is also not advisable that men lower their gaze if they are walking down the street and women are passing? These are two different issues and must be discussed separately. Another issue is that in areas other than the ones we mentioned as exceptions which the traditions have commented upon and in which the verse itself states what the limitations are, the face and the hands are among the absolute necessities of Islam, whereby covering everything but them is obligatory for women. Of course, this itself has an exception which we will discuss in the next verse, which is that if women reach beyond a certain age, it is no longer obligatory for them. But in general, covering the hair of a woman is among the compulsory precepts of Islam. It is clear that much of the hair which shows, by which one would conclude that a woman's head is uncovered, it is clearly not permissible to show in Islam. Covering the neck, the chest, the arms above the wrists, the feet, which is debated, from the ankles above, are all among the obligatory aspects of Islam. There is no controversy here. But there is another point. We said that we have to discuss separately whether or not lowering the gaze is advisable. If the look is of a flirting nature, looking with the anticipation of pleasure, this is another clear issue which is among those which are forbidden. Not only is it forbidden to look at strangers or persons to whom one is not mahram, but even those who are mahram as well. If a father was to flirt with his daughter, it is forbidden and perhaps an even greater sin. It is forbidden for a father-in-law to look at his son's wife with lust. That is, in Islam, lust is exclusively allowed between marital partners. It is not permissible in any form anywhere else between anyone else. But this should be distinguished from riba, which means to look but not with the intention of lust nor to really see or view the other person. It is a special state which could be dangerous. That is, the fear exists that the look will cause a person to deviate to a forbidden state. This, then, is also forbidden, and there is no difference of opinion on this. Thus, if a person says it is advisable to look, a lustful look is not meant, or a look which holds the fear that it may lead to something forbidden. Now we will discuss looking. We have a tradition recorded by Ali ibn Jafar, peace be upon him, the brother of Imam Raza. Peace be upon him, he asks to what point a man can look at a woman who is not permissible to him. He said, her face and her hands and her feet. Of course, face and hands are clearly so, but the jurisprudents have not issued edicts about the feet. There is another tradition about a man who is on a trip and dies. There is no man present to give him the obligatory bath for the dead, nor are any mahram women present. What should be done for the obligatory ritual bath? The opposite has also been questioned: a woman on a trip who dies and there are no mahram men present to give her bath. When in both cases they asked the Imam, Imam Sadiq peace be upon him, said about the first case, those women may touch and wash that part of the man's body which was permissible for them to see when he was alive. The same thing is said about a woman who has died. The Imam said that if they touch the face and wash her face and her hands, this is sufficient. It is not necessary to wash her whole body. Thus, a man may look at a woman's face and hands when she is alive. We also find this in the tradition in Mustamasik which Ayatullah Hakim relates about Fatima, peace be upon her. One is the tradition regarding the companion Salman, who once entered her house and saw that she was grinding barley and her hands were bleeding. This tradition makes it clear that the hands were not covered and that it was not forbidden to look at her hands, because if it had been, neither would Salman have looked at them nor would she have left them uncovered. More authentic than this is a tradition of Jabir that appears in Kafi, in Wasail, and in all of the reliable books on traditions which the ulama narrate. Jabir narrated that he went with the Prophet of God to enter the blessed Fatima's house. Peace be upon her, the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, had said that a person should seek permission to enter another's house, even if it belonged to one's mother, and that the only exception is that one need not seek permission to enter one's wife's room. When he arrived at her house, he did not enter but called out, "Assalamu alaikum ya Helal Bait." She answered from inside the house. The Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, asked, "Do you allow us to enter?" She said, "Yes, enter." He asked, "Should the person with me enter?" She said, "No." "Then wait until I cover my head." Then she said, "Enter." Again the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, asked, "Should the person with me enter?" And she said, "Yes." Jabir says that when he entered he saw that her face was sallow colored. "I became very sad when I realized it was because of lack of food. I said to myself, look at how the caliph and a king's daughter is brought up and the daughter of Prophet of God. This shows that the Prophet's daughter neither covered her face nor her hands. Otherwise Jabir's look would have been forbidden." Among the traditions, we have a great many which, when they ask of the Imam, he says that one cannot look at the forearm of a woman or at a woman's hair. All of these are mentioned, but, nowhere, does it say anything about the face and hands. Another issue is R. Raum, the pilgrim's clothes, where it is forbidden for women to cover their face, and therefore we realize that it is not obligatory. It could not be that there be something which is obligatory but not so in the realm and forbidden here. Let them cast their veils over their bosoms. The verse itself expresses the limits and does not include the face and hands. On the other hand, those who say looking is absolutely forbidden have given a reason, the very reason which has been given for it not being forbidden. They refer to the verse, "Say to the believing men to cast down their glance." He answers that in the first place, the verse does not say what not to look at. Secondly, it says min, which mean from something, and thirdly, gad means cast down or lower. There is another tradition which is referred to, and those who say that it is forbidden to look should note it. A man wrote a letter to Imam Askari, peace be upon him, where he said that there is a woman who wants to confess something and others want to listen to her confession to bear witness to it. Must she confess behind a curtain and the others listen from behind a curtain to then justly say that it was her voice? The Imam said, no. She should come forward to bear witness, but she should cover herself so that only the roundness of her face shows. Another tradition which they present is an often quoted tradition. It is called Sa'd Scarfcuff in reference to a man who went to the Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, with his face bleeding and said that he had a complaint to make. The Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, told him to speak. He said he was walking down the street of Medina, saw a woman coming towards him who was very beautiful and who had tied her scarf behind her head and her chest was visible. As she passed, he turned his head to look at her and did not see what was in front of him. Something was sticking out of the wall, and it struck his face and injured him. The verse was then revealed, "Say to the believing men to cast down their glance." Another reason they give is that it says in the traditions, is there anything which has not committed an illicit act, for the illicit act of the eyes is to look. The answer is that this is referring to looking with lust, not just looking, like the tradition which says, looking is like an arrow of shaitan, and, of course, it refers to looking with lust. There is another tradition which I have read in the books on traditions of the Sunnis. It says the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, was on a journey, probably the farewell pilgrimage. Ibn Abbas, a young boy then, was behind him. He continued to look at the women who passed back and forth in the realm. The Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, realized that he was doing this and he turned the boy's face away. Ibn Abbas then began to look from that direction. The Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, again turned the boy's face away. According to the Shiite sources, the tradition differs. It says that he was a very handsome young boy and the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, was riding, probably on a camel. A woman from the Qasimiyah tribe came to ask the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, a question. She asked and the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, answered. Then the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, realized that her eyes were fixed upon Faz ibn Abbas and Faz ibn Abbas was staring at her. The tradition states that the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, turned Faz's face away saying, a young woman and a young man, I am afraid Satan will enter. They say that because of this, it is clear that it is forbidden to look like this. There is no doubt about it. This is love-making and it is forbidden. Sheikh Ansari says that from this tradition it is clear that it was obligatory for women to cover themselves and it was not forbidden in general for men to look. Otherwise, the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, would not have looked, but he was looking at her as he was answering her questions and saw that her eyes were fixed on Fazl ibn Abbas and his on hers. Ayatollah Hakim narrates another tradition. A man by the name of Ali ibn Salah said to Imam Raza, peace be upon him, I have a problem. I look at beautiful women and it makes me happy to do so, but I have no bad intentions. The Imam said, there is no problem as God is aware of your intentions and you have no ill intentions but fear an illicit act. We have said that there are two issues involved here. First, what is obligatory upon women and what is permissible for men? Those points which are clear are that it is obligatory upon women to cover themselves except for their face and hands. This is neither compulsory nor in the Holy Quran, nor in the traditions can we find reason to believe that it is obligatory upon women to cover their face and hands. But as to whether it is permitted for men to look, it is clear and definite that if the look is a lustful one, that is, a look with intention of lust, there is no doubt that this is forbidden. If a look is not a lustful one but the surrounding conditions and situation are such that a fear exists that one may be led to deviate, that too is forbidden. These two are both forbidden, not only towards women to whom men are not, mahram, but to women, they are, mahram, with as well, other than their wife. It is even forbidden for a man to look in this way at another man. Thus there are only these two questions. Is it obligatory upon a woman to cover her face and hands? And secondly, is it permissible or not for a man to look without lust or fear of deviation? Chapter 19. From the viewpoint of traditions. From the point of view of the traditions, and the external aspects of the verse, it is more or less certain that it is not necessary for women to cover the face and hands, and it is not forbidden for men to look at a woman's face or hands if his look is not one of lust or fear of deviation. The traditions are numerous and we have only referred to a few, and a few more will be mentioned. One is a tradition from Imam Raza, peace be upon him, who is asked, "Is it permissible for a man to look at the hair of his wife's sister?" No. It is not permissible unless she be a woman who is past childbearing age. A wife's sister is just like any other woman that you are not related to according to the divine law, and you can only look at her and her hair if she is beyond childbearing age. Thus, whenever the imams are asked if it is permissible to look at a woman's hair, etc., they are never asked if it is permissible to look at a woman's face when the look is not one of lust or fear of deviation. There is another tradition from Imam Raza, peace be upon him, about a young boy. Must a 7-year-old boy be encouraged to recite the ritual prayer? He said it is not obligatory, but to encourage is a good thing. It is not necessary that a woman hide her hair from him until he reaches puberty. We see that again it is covering the hair which is referred to and not covering the face. Chapter 20. Concerning what their right hands own. Again, concerning what their right hands own, if a female slave is mahram to a man, is a male slave, mahram, to his female owner or not? I am using the term mahram here erroneously with a purpose, because this is an interpretation that others have. There is a difference when we say mahram, meaning, for instance, they are not permitted to marry. It is permitted for him to look at her hair, but he is not mahram in the usual sense, such as the father-in-law and his son's wife. Some have interpreted it this way. When a question is asked about this, the answer given is that there is no problem if a male slave look at his female owner's hair. Again, hair is mentioned, not the face. There is a discussion concerning a qadi, eunuch, and whether or not he is a male slave or a woman. The ruling was that he was like a woman and there was no problem if he looked at a woman's hair. A person asked Imam Raza, peace be upon him, if this was necessary to cover before a qadi, and the Imam said it was not. They used to enter my father's house and women did not cover their hair before them. As to the women of the book, of course, they do not need to be dimmer. There is no problem with looking at the hair of a Jewish woman or a Christian or a Zoroastrian woman or a woman who is none of these. The Holy Prophet said, it is not forbidden to look at the hands and hair of dimmer women. Wherever you look, you see that the issue which is an exception is referred to or questioned, and the face and hands are not questioned. Whereas if it had been forbidden to look at the face and hands of a woman, they would have been referred to in the exceptions. As to dimmer women, some of the ulama believe that we must look and see what the situation was at the time of the Holy Prophet, what extent of the body was not covered. Clearly the dimmer women did not cover their hair or their hands to a certain point. There was no problem, then, in looking at them. I have mentioned that in every exception, it is permitted to look without lust except under one condition. That is, it is permissible to look at a woman in lust, when one wants to see a woman to decide whether, or not to marry her, as a serious suitor for marriage. Of course, it is clear that a man cannot spend years looking at women in this way to by determine whether or not he wants to get married. There are other conditions as well. How much education should she have? Where does she come from, etc. After all of the other conditions are met and the only one remaining is to see if one wants to marry her, it is this situation that the exception refers to. If the purpose is only lust, it is clearly not with the intention of marrying. These, then, were some of the traditions, but there are many more from both Sunni and Shiite sources. The traditions say it refers to Muslim woman and not the dhimma, but not with lust or with a look which holds the fear of deviating within in. It is permissible to look at her in what she customarily wears outside of her home. Ayatollah Burujerdi says that one must suffice to look only at that which was common in those days. Perhaps customs have changed today and even more areas of their body are uncovered. There is another point to mention following this. There is an edict, based on a tradition which some ulama find difficult to accept. It is concerned with a tradition where the imam said that there is no problem to look at the hair of a Bedouin woman, a woman from suburb of Kufar or Ulj, non-Arab Bedouin women. Why? Because it is their custom to dress in their particular style and they refuse to cover their heads. So it is not forbidden to look at them, but, of course, not with lust. Some of the ulama have issued edicts just as the tradition states, but the late Ayatollah Muhammad Kazim does not issue one because he says, what is perhaps meant is that in places where these kinds of women are, it is not obligatory for men to curtail their comings and goings. There is no problem if their eyes fall on these women's hair. There is no problem if the women are told to cover themselves and they do not listen. Therefore, he felt it was an exceptional situation, not one that needed a religious edict. Another religious jurisprudent says the same thing holds for urban women. If they are told they should cover themselves and they do not, there is no problem if men look at their hair. Chapter 21. Hearing the voice of a non-mahram woman. Another issue is that of hearing the voice of a non-mahram woman. Is this forbidden or not? This is clear from the edicts that it is not forbidden as long as it is not for lust or in fear of deviating. There is no problem between a blind person who is hearing another. However, there is caution. Where it does not concern a man, he should avoid it. But it is forbidden for a woman to make her voice very pleasant and attractive so as to cause confusion in a man, whereby a man who has a sickness in his heart hears her voice and gets attracted to it through lust. This is among the things which are very clear. It is permissible to hear the voice of a non-mahram woman as long as her voice is normal and not one to cause lust or arouse the fear of deviating. The verse of the Holy Quran is clear. It does not say women should not speak. No. It says they should not change the tone of their voice. Women continuously went to the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his progeny, and to the imams and asked the questions they had. This is clear. Chapter 22. Shaking hands. Another issue is shaking hands. Of course, all of these issues arise only when there is no lust or fear of deviation present, otherwise they are clearly not permitted. Again, the traditions and religious edicts confirm one another in this matter. The imam was asked if it is permitted to shake hands with a non-related woman. He said, no, unless the hands be covered or the woman be mahram. One must not shake the hands with a woman who is not mahram unless her hand is covered, and even then, pressure should not be applied. Chapter 23. These are issues of religious edicts. Here there are two more points which should be mentioned. The first is that the issues mentioned up to this point were all referred to within the contents of the verses and the traditions. Perhaps no further questions would occur to a person up to this point, but these are some of the issues which have occurred to me. Since this is a matter of an edict, everyone must note that I have mentioned my own point of view and referred to these proofs because of their necessity, but the issue is one which must be followed according to the divine law. The second point is that edicts exist which are comparable to the ones mentioned that include the religious edicts of the great ulama, but these are the edicts of the minority, not the majority. For instance, Sheikh Tusi gave such an edict as well as Sheikh Hidayat and Sheikh Ansari. All three are among the most learned Shiite scholars. The others mention these reasons like Ayatollah Hakim in Mastama Sikh, but when it comes to issuing a religious edict they hold back. The actions of Muslims, to this point, have been opposed to these views, so the religious jurisprudent moves beyond the issue.